Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast, the post-Super Bowl edition of the Peter King Podcast. I'm going to be joined by my friend and peer and pal at NBC Sports, Miles Simmons, and we are going to dissect all things Super Bowl. We're going to have a fun guest. I recorded an interview last week while at the Super Bowl with Deion Sanders, and you will enjoy that because, as you know, Deion Sanders is opinionated about a lot of things. And we get into the Hall of Fame quite a bit here, which I also wrote a bit for my column this week. Miles, we're going to start with this. Give me your one scene at the Super Bowl that you'll always remember.
Oh, man. That's a great question. Travis Kelce, after the game, talking about how much this season meant to him. And, you know, he's at the podiums in the bowels of State Farm Stadium. And in those moments, it's always weird because, you know, you've got this setup where on one side of a room that gets separated by a curtain, you've got the champions. And then on the other side of the room, there are podiums that are for the losing team. And so sometimes you can hear what's going on from the other side when you're on the one side. And I always find that very strange because it's just, you know, you've got the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, to use that cliche. Yeah. But Travis Kelce was talking about how much the year meant to him. And he started getting a little choked up because he said that he got closer with his brother. Right. And we all know how good that podcast is that they do together, and to meet his brother at the mountaintop and then to come away a champion, and then to also see how the nation got to know his parents a little bit and how they embraced them and how much it really meant to him, not just to win, but to win it in the fashion that they did. And, you know, being against his brother, but beating his brother, but being there with his brother. That, to see how emotional that got him, that will definitely stick with me.
You know, I thought what was so interesting about that, you know, that sort of interaction all week is that they were essentially called on by the NFL to be the stars of the show.
Yeah.
And they didn't shrink from it. They both, and I mean, performed is the wrong word. They both played very well. And they also both really got into their sides of the story there. And I think both of those guys are such credits to football.
Yeah.
And I do think that both of them will end up representing Cleveland Heights one day in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think Travis is almost a no doubter. But I think that in the last, I'd say 2 years, maybe three, Jason has played so well that he's played himself into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so I really appreciate everything they did. Now, my moment that I will never forget. I mean, I did have 10 minutes in his office post game with Andy Reid, but it isn't this moment that I'll really remember. I will remember that one, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But The thing I'll never forget is I was talking. I had just left Andy Reid's office and I saw Sky Moore at his locker talking to a few people. And I wanted to ask him a very specific question about his touchdown catch, you know, which ended up being absolutely vital. You know, it got him up to 35 points, obviously, in the fourth quarter. But I wanted to ask him about the amazing thing that the Philadelphia Eagles basically did. And again, look, I'm not saying that Jonathan Gannon isn't a very good coach and doesn't deserve whatever comes to him if he becomes a contender for this job with the Arizona Cardinals. But I would have some very serious questions for Jonathan Gannon. In the first place, you know, the first touchdown to Kadarius Toney, where he flashes in on jet motion and then comes back out and has 11 yards of separation between the nearest defender of the Eagles. So you're a defensive coordinator, then you're a defensive back coach, whatever. At the end of that play, you get your guys in, say, listen, we got to watch for that the rest of the game. It was so wide open that who knows, they may try it again. And 3 minutes later, they score their fifth touchdown of the game on the exact same formation and play on the left side instead of the right. And to me, that is absolutely inexcusable. I gave Jonathan Gannon one of my goats of the week because of it, because that just can't happen. It happened once. That's awful enough. It happened twice. I just, there's only one word for it, and that's inexcusable. But, so I'm at Sky Moore's locker, and I'm talking to him, Annie Koblitz, our videographer and producer.
Also Hawken grad.
Yeah, she went to high school with you. That's one of the great coincidences of NBC Sports. So Annie Koblitz has got her camera trained on Sky Moore, and I've got a microphone here asking him about the play. And here comes Patrick Mahomes into the scene, and he gives Sky Moore an absolute bear hug. And, you know, I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. And he goes, waited till the last game, huh? Love you. Way to get it in there. And Sky Moore, of all the smiles I've seen in the 2022 football season, Sky Moore's smile was the biggest, the broadest, and the most euphoric. And so I just thought that was a really, really cool moment that Sky Moore, excuse me, who's had some problems this year, some fumble issues, and probably has not been as prominent in the offense as he would have liked, scores the last touchdown of a Super Bowl season, and Patrick Mahomes makes sure that he tells him, hey, I love you. You came through for us when it counted. That was the really, really cool moment. I think the other thing I would say about post-game, so as you can probably hear, I don't know, I've been sick for like 2 weeks, and I've got bad cough and all that. So I'm just, and it hasn't gone away since I got back from the AFC Championship game in Kansas City. But anyway, be that as it may, I have not been feeling that well. And when I went down into the Kansas City locker room after the game, maybe 45 minutes after the game, it opened. So it's obviously mobbed with reporters and media people. And there had to be 50 human beings in there. I think all men. There might have been a woman or two connected with the Chiefs who were smoking cigars, but there had to be 50 people in there smoking cigars. And I just said, whoa, this is going to be bad. And so I spent the night alternately coughing and writing in between coughing jags. But, you know, and that's sort of the way it was post game. But that was a really joyous Kansas City locker room. Miles, I want to talk about three things about this game, and I want to get your opinion on all three. And why don't we just do it this way? We're going to talk all Super Bowl in the first segment here. Then we're going to get to Deion Sanders. Then in the second half of the pod, the back half of the pod, we're going to discuss all things NFL. The last coaching situations, what a new hire in Baltimore means to Lamar Jackson. And we'll go around the league a little bit. I've got 10 little topics that I wrote down on the plane on the way home last night that we'll just buzz through. Okay. Here's the first situation I want to talk about in this game. So the penalty late in the game. I've got very strong opinions about this. And you know, as everyone knows, the score was 35 all, minute 48 left in the game. Third down, Mahomes throws an incomplete pass, and that kind of set up what appeared to be a Harrison Butker 33-yard field goal, which is the equivalent of an extra point. And so theoretically, Philadelphia would get the ball back with one timeout left and about a minute 40 to go. But wait, there's a penalty flag called. James Bradbury called for a defensive hold on Juju Smith-Schuster. Replays, to me, were pretty clear that there was some restriction of Juju Smith-Schuster. But I think if it had not been called, nobody would complain. My thing, and afterwards, obviously, Carl Cheffers was interviewed by a pool reporter, Lindsey Jones, and said it was a clear case of a jersey grab. So let me start off, Miles, and ask you what you thought of the call, the flag, and the play itself.
Well, I thought that there was a flag, and you know, where I was seated in the press box was kind of right behind that end zone that was painted in, you know, the Eagles colors and had the Eagles logo in it. And so I could see that Juju Smith-Schuster was being held and that he was being restricted. So when I saw the flag come in, it didn't necessarily surprise me. And then on the other side of the play as well, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and yes, he's backside, but he also was being very, very clearly restricted. And so I thought from that perspective, it's like, all right, well, I see the penalty. However, I understand why folks would be upset about a penalty call in that particular situation, because the consistency of what had and had not been called over the course of the game, you didn't see that. I mean, there was a play in the first half where Juju Smith-Schuster is going over the middle and he is very clearly being restricted. And I thought that they could have called pass interference on that, not just defensive holding, and we didn't see that called. And so when you don't see that in the first half and then you see this in the second half, I understand why folks would be upset about the consistency of it. But from a standpoint of, well, was there a foul or was there not a foul? I mean, I thought from the very get-go that there was a foul, so it didn't bother me that that call was made, Peter.
You know, I forget who wrote this on Twitter. I think it might have been Rich Gannon. I forget who did, but I thought it sort of expressed my feelings perfectly. First of all, I detest when someone says, "Oh, you don't throw a flag in the last 2 minutes of the game. Let the players decide it." Bull crap. If there was a rule in the NFL rule book that said in the first 58 minutes, here's how you call the game. In the last 2 minutes, here's how you call the game. No, there is no such rule. So in other words, if you see something, no matter how big the play is, you know, with a minute 48 to go in the Super Bowl, you call it. If you believe that it has been a clear case of a defensive back restricting the wide receiver. Okay, that's number one. And number two, I think it was Gannon, could have been somebody else, who said, listen, if there was a false start, a guy flinches on the line, does significantly less, and nobody jumps on the other side, but he flinches, say a guard flinches on the line, and everybody is watching saying, oh my God, they missed that flag. What are you talking about? I mean, that would have been 1/10 as egregious as what happened with James Bradberry restricting, even though it wasn't a horrible restriction. He still did restrict Juju Smith-Schuster. The fact is, you know, in my opinion, and maybe it's just because 9 jillion people cover the Super Bowl, but there's been just way too much debate about a play that everybody, including James Bradberry, admits was a foul.
Yes.
So why have we spent basically 48 hours, you know, talking about, oh, this ruined the game, this did this, and cheesy call, horrible call. It's a foul. Get over it.
Yeah.
If you don't think it should have been called, that's your opinion. But, okay, so that's one thing. I think it is absurd, all the attention that has been paid to this. Number two, there's a play in this game that very, very little discussion was had late in the game. But I'm going to tell you that I thought this was a gigantic play in the game. And I gave a very good guard, Isaac Sumalo of the Eagles, one of my, along with Jonathan Gannon, they were both goats of the week. Mm-hmm. So we were only 20 minutes into the game. All right. Eagles are up 14-7 and they've got 4th and 2 feet right near midfield. And as you know, Miles, this year, the Philadelphia Eagles have been, ended the season rather, 34 out of 38 on quarterback sneaks. So, I mean, they're 90% on quarterback sneaks, basically. Mm-hmm. So to debate, I mean, it was a high likelihood that they were going to sneak on this play. And obviously, because that's the formation they were in. Yes. And poor Isaac, he false started, and now it's 4th and 5, which I think was marked 1 yard incorrectly, but be that as it may. So, you know, on the next play, the Philadelphia quarterback, Jalen Hurts, fumbles the ball. It's picked up. And it's picked up and run in for a touchdown. And look, I'm not absolving, by Nick Bolton, excuse me. I'm not absolving Jalen Hurts from blame on this. He fumbled, his fault. But let's now recreate history. Okay. Now it's 4th and 2 feet and they make that play. So now it's 1st and 10. Right around midfield for Philadelphia. They got a new set of downs. And look, the way that they had played early on in this game, you know, a 75-yard drive and a 68-yard drive on their first two possessions. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but they're either getting 3 or 7 there. So, Miles, my point is the Eagles were up 14-7 at the time of that false start. If they don't turn it over there, or if Isaac Sumalo does not do the false start, and then on the next play, obviously, they turn it over and they run it back for a touchdown, Nick Bolton. Obviously, you know, there it's 14-7 going to be likely 17-7 or 21-7. So my point is that was a gigantic play. In a game you lose by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
To have that false start happen, it was just a gigantic play. And by the way, very uncharacteristic, because this line is not only good, it's highly efficient.
Yeah, it was one of those plays and one of those sequences that really, really, really turned the game. And it obviously didn't necessarily mean that Kansas City was going to take that lead right there. And the Kansas City offense had a lot of problems in the first half. But you don't have that sequence there with the false start and backing it up. And then Jalen Hurts fumbles and then it gets returned for a touchdown. It's a completely different game. And so that's why when people are getting so up in arms about, you know, the ending sequence with the hold and whatnot, to me, it's like, well, you got to go back to the first half and say, you know, Jalen Hurts just dropped the ball. I mean, literally dropped the football there. I mean, that is one of the key plays in this game that allowed the Philadelphia Eagles to lose. And I think you're absolutely right, too, with the false start penalty. That is one of the key plays in this game that allowed the Philadelphia Eagles to lose it. And yeah, of course, the Chiefs did everything that they could to take it in the second half, too. So I don't want to dismiss that. But when you look at this game, it's never just one play, you know, and that's what Nick Sirianni even said after the game. You know, there were lapses basically by all three phases. You can point to that one with Jalen Hurts and Smallo, you know, with the false start and the fumble. You can point to the special teams with Kadarius Toney's return, which was incredible, especially in that situation. Yep. And I guess you could look at the defense too. I mean, who not only had the penalty at the end, but they really couldn't stop a nosebleed in the second half at all. And so all of those things combined is why the Kansas City Chiefs are Super Bowl 57 champions and the Philadelphia Eagles are not.
So the third thing I want to bring up is Patrick Mahomes and how masterful I thought he was. After he hurt his ankle again late in the first half, he then had 48 minutes without playing football because of the long halftime show. Obviously. And I wrote something in my column Monday that I find, I mean, because think about this, Miles. In the second half of this game, the Kansas City Chiefs had the ball four times. Patrick Mahomes comes out and everybody's just hoping he can finish the game.
Right.
And on his four possessions, he goes touchdown, 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 field goal. And think about it, on that field goal, I think we all feel that if they needed a touchdown because they basically just burned to a minute and 40 of the clock, you know, to get Harrison Butker into position to kick, you know, just a piddling gimme field goal. But so he goes TD, 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 field goal. So after the game, I figured out, okay, Tom Brady at 27 played in his third Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes at 27 played in his third Super Bowl. Tom Brady 3-0, Patrick Mahomes 2-1. But let's talk about everything else. At that point in their careers, at age 27, regular season plus playoffs, how amazing is it that Tom Brady has won 80% of his starts by age 27. Patrick Mahomes has won 80% of his starts at age 27. Okay. But here's one of the things that I had to do the math on this three times. In their postseason games at age 20, by the age of 27 in their career, Brady had 11 touchdowns and three interceptions. Okay, Patrick Mahomes, 35 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. So 11-3 for Brady, 35-7 for Mahomes. I'm not in any way attempting to say that Mahomes is going to be Brady. I don't know what he'll be. What I am attempting to say is Patrick Mahomes not only has the will and the ethos of Brady, but he right now has very similar production numbers at age 27. And everybody says, oh, you can't compare Mahomes to Brady. Why not?
Right.
I mean, why can't you? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that, I mean, I said to a couple of friends once Brady retired and everybody's going, oh, you know, we'll never see another Brady. We'll never see. I mean, are we sure? I mean, and I don't want to say, obviously, Tom Brady is the greatest football player we've ever seen. And I don't want to put him down in any way. But I mean, Patrick Mahomes has been excellent since he came onto the scene and became a starting quarterback in 2018. There's an argument, really, that you could say he was even excellent in that one start he made against Denver in 2017 to end the season because the Kansas City Chiefs had already clinched the playoff spot. So, I mean, I have been so impressed with everything that Patrick Mahomes has done since he became a starter. I will never forget being in the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum press box, which that year was a trailer park, basically, in 2018, and it was week three, and he's playing the Niners, and he makes that play where he rolls to his left, and he comes all the way back to his right, and he finds the receiver in the back of the end zone. I don't think I'd ever seen anything like that. And it's just been play after play and year after year and game after game where he keeps doing things that are just incredible. And it's the stuff that he brings off the field as well, where he gets his receivers together in Texas. And this is something Andy Reid referenced in his post-game press conference after Super Bowl 57, where he said that Mahomes bringing all those guys in, and when you're implementing all new receivers, getting all of them comfortable with him so that by the time they got to phase two of the offseason program and they're in Kansas City, everybody knew what was up. And right, that's because of his leadership. So it's not just the stuff that we see on game days. It's the stuff that he does to prepare not just himself, but everybody else. It's really, really incredible stuff. And I mean, I appreciate watching greatness, and I am just reveling the fact that we now hopefully get to see Patrick Mahomes continue to be great for years and years and years to come. Cause that's just, he really is incredible.
Yeah. I am, it's very hard to be around him. I've gotten to know him a bit, talked to him after the game a little bit, one-on-one. And it's very hard to not have tremendous admiration for him.
Honestly.
Just let me spend 1 minute on corn dog.
Oh, yes.
So many of you who are listening to this might have heard this thing that after the game in Reed's office, you may have seen the video on it, is me and Andy Reid, Bob Lamont, his agent, Maverick, Andy Reid's 9-year-old grandson is in the room, as is Annie Koblitz, my videographer. She's kind of, it's a small little cubicle, and she is scrunched up in the corner, and she's got a camera wide angle on both of us. And I basically asked him about the play, and he started going into, we call it corn dog, here's why we ran it and all that stuff. And what I found really, really interesting is that, you know, the part of it on corn is because it is a corner route run by Kadarius Toney on that play. But Eric Bieniemy told me that they called it corn dog. He said, "Hey, we like to eat." And so a lot of people are saying that that's like the silliest thing I've ever heard. But my whole career in sports writing, I can go back to 1984 covering the Cincinnati Bengals when Sam Weich, they had a running play that was 61. And Sam Weich wanted to, and I covered the Bengals. Sam was the coach of the team, wacky guy, very imaginative. So he wanted the quarterback, when he called it in the huddle, to call it Mantle. And he goes, you know, Mickey Mantle, 61 home runs. And so I just said, Boomer Esiason, who was his quarterback, said, wait a second. Roger Maris is the guy who hit 61 home runs, right, not Mantle. And Sam goes, nobody's ever heard of Roger Maris. We're calling it Mantle. So the 61 play in the Bengals playbook that year for the running play was called Mantle. Anyway, so people have been calling them different plays over the years, but I found it really interesting that it is named after a food on purpose, because in the immortal words of Eric Bieniemy, quote, we like to eat. Anyway, so we're going to get into Deion Sanders now. Listen to Deion, and then on the back end, Miles and I are going to have a lightning round. 10 questions, 10 minutes. Get ready. Here's Deion Sanders, the head football coach of Colorado, who is very confident, as you'll hear, that he will be bringing a national title to Boulder, Colorado.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.
Happy to be joined by Deion Sanders, the football coach at the University of Colorado.
My man.
I mean,
we go way back.
We go
Let's just take care of that first and foremost.
Okay, we go way back.
We go way back. Long, long, I mean way, way back.
I go back with you to the point pre-cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay, and one time you said, if you ever really need me, call the road hotel the night before a game and ask for Red Fox.
That was my travel name.
And that was fantastic.
That was my travel name.
Yeah.
That was, and my favorite comedian.
Yeah.
Red Fox to this day.
Red Fox is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, Deion, your life is a movie.
Well, it's different chapters.
Your life is a movie.
Different chapters.
But I always will think that if you really wanted to, if you really wanted to, you could have played 20 years in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think I wanted to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I wanted to, but the timing. If I had to do it all over, I probably would focus on baseball. If I had to do it all over. That's the truth.
Would you feel better today if you focused on baseball, or how do you feel physically today?
Physically, it's a new normal. Of course, I had blood clots and I had 9 surgeries and I got 2 toes amputated and the whole left side is not. It would never be like it was. So I'm walking with a limp.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not swag. It's a real limp. But it's a new normal. But I'm happy. I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here.
You know, there's so many interesting things to talk to you about, but I think the most interesting thing, I could not figure out why you went to coach at Jackson State for 3 years. And when you chose to try to improve your lot in life, that you got criticized for it by a lot of people.
Well, it's our people.
But I would ask you, what really appealed to you about coaching football that now you've made it like your next life?
Because I've always been somewhat of a coach. When I played the game, I've always taken the younger players up under my wing and tried to cultivate their game and their skills and their lifestyles and to allow them to know, no, these are the steps you take to be this. These are the steps. So when I got totally out of the game, I remember before Champ was Chad Ochocinco, before Champ Bailey was Champ Bailey, they all flew down to Texas, and I had like a mini camp of pro players that really teach them life, the game, and all that. So I've always been sort of coaching. Then I got into coaching my kids by mistake. I'm just sitting there watching, and they were just being coached the most ignorant stuff I've ever seen in my life, and everybody would have had a concussion if I wouldn't have stood in. And I just started from there and said, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. And I went and got several guys from the NFL, former players, Kevin Mathis and George Hegeman and so forth. And we started a youth organization in Texas called Truth. And we had 1,500 kids our first trial. And it stemmed from there. So I've been coaching for probably well over 15 to 20 years. The country is just getting to know Coach Prime, but I've been Coach Prime for a long time. And I adore it. It's not a job. It's not a path. It's real. It's genuine. It's something I love.
It's more than coaching,
yes,
though, because when you coach, you coach.
I'm passionate
about college, it. At a college football, you also have to recruit.
Yes.
So I would think that gives you a pretty good advantage if you walk in and you're Deion Sanders and you say to an 18-year-old kid, I want you to come to Jackson State or I want you to come to Colorado.
Well,
does
different.
It help?
It helps tremendously based on situation. Some people could coach and teach against that. They would bring up all your lefts instead of focusing on your rights. I've done a lot of things right, maybe a couple things wrong that God has shown me the way to recant that. But I absolutely adore these young men. I adore sitting down with the families and understanding dynamics of the family, then understanding how can I assist that kid into getting to his destination. Really, we're navigational systems trying to help these kids be professionals, not just professional football players, but professional spirit.
What did you love about Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock when the games actually started?
I like to compete, but the competition does not stop. Every time you walk outside your hotel room or your home, somebody's competing with you. They're competing with what you have on, your shoes, your clothes, the car you drive up in, the home that you just walked out of, your credit cards or whatever you deem to have or you call worth. It's always a competition. It's not fair, but that's the reality of our country. It's always a competition. This is my son right here. Yeah, see? What he's going to call me? Tell him what you called me, Pop. This is like a son to me, for real.
Yeah.
Like,
same
for real.
Life.
Wow.
I'll tell you that.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I met him in a hotel.
You see the drip? Oh, my God. I got it from the best.
Shake his hand, please. There you go.
Hello.
We met in a hotel in Atlanta. He was going through it, and we haven't departed since then.
Wow.
And I love him to life. And if I keep talking about him, he's going to make me cry because, you know, when it comes to him, I'm soft. This is my guy. I love him too. Ooh, look at him. Ooh.
This is why he would be the best coach, the best recruiter that college football ever seen. And I'm not saying this just because it's my man. Like, I can go through story after story.
He's going to get the job done at Colorado.
He's going to get the job done. Like, I love you, man.
I love you too, boy.
All right, I got to go.
All right.
I was just coming over here.
The family here?
Yeah. They're right here.
Okay. I got to see them.
We got these tuxedos for the party.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. That was authentic. That was real. You couldn't have planned that better, man. On your show.
Yeah, Adam. Yeah. So I'm really curious. Like, you want to be at the top level of college football.
It's not I want to be. I'm going to be.
Yeah.
This is not a want. This is what we gonna do.
Right. And so I wonder, when you look at people like Nick Saban,
mm-hmm.
is part of your dream, I want to be in a national championship game against Nick Saban in Alabama?
I don't pick the opponent. I don't give a darn who's on the other side of the field. I just know where I'm going to be, not what I want to be, where I'm going to be in due time. We're going to make it there. I'm assured of that. That's not a fantasy. That's a reality. We're coming.
When you interviewed for the job at Colorado,
mm-hmm.
okay, what did they want to know about Deion Sanders?
They did all their homework before they came. You got to understand that. They don't come and do your homework there.
Yeah.
They do the homework and come. It was different because now you're not interviewing with the sense of, I got to prove myself.
Right.
Because I have. So now you're interviewing with the sense of, does this fit for us?
Right.
Is there a fit? And our AD, Rick George, is an unbelievable human being. And we clicked. And it had to be a connection. It had to be a click. And it was.
Can you tell me, what is it? Why did you choose this for your next life when you could have chosen quite a few other walks of life?
This chose me. I didn't choose it. It chose me. It's an extension of who I am. It's just a path that I had to keep going. I couldn't deviate from that. I've always been in people's business of trying to help someone elevate. It just happens to be a football involved. It happens to be life and lives involved. It happens to be timing involved. It happens to be cultures involved. And I love all of it. And I'm involved in every aspect of everything that's involved.
I want to ask you two other questions before we get to the real business of why you're here. Oikos,
you got
baby.
That right.
But I want to ask you, I'm a Hall of Fame voter,
mm-hmm.
and you've been pretty outspoken
right.
about what has happened to the Hall of Fame in your eyes in recent
solved.
Years.
You know we've gotten
okay.
solved.
All
come
right.
on, it's open house.
Well,
Is it not?
Look.
What do you call a Hall of Famer? A guy who, what?
A guy who was so great when you watched him play, you knew he was a Hall of Famer.
He changed the game. That's what I was told. when I was a shorty coming up.
Yeah, but wait a second. Guards don't change the game.
Excuse me?
Guards.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
They change the way the game is played. Yes, they do. If you have a guard that's dominant, that changes the way you call your game. That changes the game.
All right. Well, Larry Allen, that's correct.
Larry Allen changed the game.
Yeah.
Larry Allen changed the game. That was a guard tackle, whatever you want to call it. So, yes, it is. He changed the game.
All right. So how would you sort of separate if you had your choice in the Hall of Fame? Would you really want to have a wing of the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, upper room.
An upper room.
You got to have an upper room.
And so how do you decide who's in it?
Shoot, they decide who's in it. The game decides. So you know who changed the game. Like if you just say, okay, so you're going to put LT beside some of the guys that y'all been putting in the last few years. You just going to have them sit beside LT like it's cool? And at night, the lights are still on and somebody got to turn off the lights. And LT say, man, get your butt over there and turn off the darn lights. Because he's at that level.
Yeah.
And some are not. It's just, you know. You guys can't feel good about this stuff, but you have a quota. You shouldn't have to meet a quota every year to send guys in. If they ain't that, they ain't that. That's not right.
Yeah.
Because that's what y'all told me, a Hall of Fame award. And secondly, how can Devin Hester not be in the Hall of Fame?
I'm a Devin Hester devotee.
Devin Hester changed the game.
Yeah.
When you think about returners or anything, Devin Hester, he changed the game. How can he, the second year straight? That stuff makes me mad, man. Because now it's like hate is involved. Hate shouldn't be involved in this stuff.
I don't think hate is involved.
So how can Devin Hester not be in there?
Listen, you're talking to somebody. I voted for Devin Hester.
Okay, so how is he not in? Give me anything.
This is my opinion. Nobody says I'm not voting for Devin Hester because of X. Here's my opinion: the number of snaps that Devin Hester played.
He's a returner.
I understand.
Would you want him out there every play?
No, you don't want him out there every play. I understand exactly
what
you're saying.
He's unique. You got to look at the situation uniquely.
Yeah.
He's unique.
Right.
And he did something that has never been done before. He changed. You couldn't even get up to go pee. You would hold it on fourth down because of Devin Hester. You would hold it because of Devin Hester. Nobody wanted to kick
In other words, you wait for the quarterback to get on the field.
Exactly. Exactly. Devin Hester.
Okay, but here's the biggest issue. How in the world would you decide who goes in the upper room? You say,
You know who should decide? We should decide that. Y'all need to get out of the way and let us decide the upper room. Y'all have done your thing, and I appreciate that. I appreciate it immensely because you earned the right to be on that committee to vote. The upper room, that should be us because when we're together, we know who ain't got no business in there. When we're together, we're like, where you get your jacket from?
What would you do, for instance, with, like, Don Hutson, who in 1935 to 1945 caught three times as many passes as anybody did in the first 25 years
in
of the NFL.
In his era, was he totally dominant?
Yes.
And he should be in the upper room.
All right.
You can't – don't compare eras because eras are different.
Right, right, right.
Like you got quarterbacks throwing for 4,000 and 5,000 because they're throwing every turn down. You can't touch the receivers. And some didn't back in the day. That does not eliminate their worth.
Who do you think is the greatest quarterback of all time?
Brady.
Longevity?
Not
or greatness?
Just the will that he had. The will, the way, what he brought to the game and his fire and his passion. I've never heard anybody, a player, say anything negative about how he attacked the game. And he's a winner. He's a darn winner. And once upon a time for me, it was Montana. It was Joe. Shoot, it was Joe. But Brady, with the Super Bowl wins, eclipsed that. I love Troy. Three Super Bowl wins.
You know who I think is going to be Brady? Mahomes.
Let me tell you why not. He may get opportunities to get there, but sooner or later, it takes a left. All this stuff that you think is going to be consistently going, it takes a left. Your coaching staff now gets assembled. Sooner or later,
it starts to get picked
up. Sooner or later, that offensive coordinator that everybody keep overlooking every year, he's going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a difference. Now, Andy's a great caller. I love Andy Reid. He's a great play caller. But Brady had so many opportunities because he was a team guy when it came to salary, when it came to him taking the back seat and letting other guys get in there. that day is gone, man. These quarterbacks want their bag. They want their bag. They ain't taking nothing for the team. That's over. It's not going to happen.
The will of Mahomes is special.
Love it.
I just think, especially what he proved after that Jacksonville game.
Yeah, but you're talking about his will, and I love him, because you've seen him consistently in the playoffs.
Right.
That's why he's on the tip of your tongue. Now, some of these other guys, if you consistently see him, you'll be talking about, hey, man, shoot, the will of this guy or the passion that he plays with, but you got to consistently see him.
Right. Okay.
We talked about LeBron, right? But when he's not in the playoffs, we build somebody up to be the Giant because it's not LeBron.
Do you think, by the way, LeBron easily could have been a tight end in the NFL?
I think he would have been a receiver.
You think he would have been a wide receiver?
Yeah, and he would have been very
successful. His body would have been different then.
He would have been very
successful.
Would
he be DK Metcalf type?
LeBron could have been whatever he wanted to be. That's a dog. And the dog recognizes the dog.
Right. Oikos.
Oikos.
Tell me why you're here. Why do you love Oikos?
First of all, it's not something that I just endorse. It's something that I really enjoy. And not only when I enjoy it, I introduce it because it is in the darn refrigerator, so the family eats it as well. So now we have a family affair. This is the second year straight that Oikos and I have partnered in for a Super Bowl spot. Now, when I say mom and them, my sister, my daughter, and both of my sons are in the spot, and we're competing, and I love it. Let me get the taglines. Oikos strives to support all strengths that make you unstoppable. That's who we are. Everybody has a strength. You have a strength. You ain't no joke with the pen in your mind. That's your strength. It has made you consistently over how many years?
39.
Unstoppable. I have a strength, and I'm hitting another chapter of it, and it continues to make me unstoppable. So that's what Oikos is a part of, and I'm thankful that I partner with a company that thinks like that, and I love it.
Deion Sanders, the head football coach of the Colorado Buffaloes.
We coming, baby.
It's been great having you.
And thank you for my guest, Adam Pac-Man Jones.
<That's> we my did son. See the Pac-Man.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Three great words. Free fries Friday. Especially when they're used in that exact order. Get a free medium fries with $1 minimum purchase.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Valid one time on Fridays at participating McDonald's through 12/31/24. Excludes tax, must opt into rewards.
My thanks to Deion Sanders. He's always interesting. I've always enjoyed being around him. I've always liked our conversations. And so my thanks to him for spending 20 good minutes with me at the Super Bowl last week. And I hope you enjoyed that. So let's just, I just want to put a small bow as we record this close to 5 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday post Super Bowl. That silly corn dog video that Annie Koblitz did of me and Andy Reid, I think it's like 19 seconds long, from Andy Reid's office, in which I incredulously say, Mahomes didn't step into the huddle and call it corn dog. And Reid goes, oh no, he said corn dog. So anyway, it was kind of funny.
It was very funny. It was your Barbara Walters moment where she said to Vistiviano, she says, oh yeah, I'm a silly rabbit. What? Does he call that?
Yeah.
That was that moment for me.
It was funny. But anyway, at 5 o'clock, here we are. And as of right now, on NBC Sports TikTok account, whatever that is, because I'm not a TikToker, it's got 550,000 views right now after being up just today. It's got 250,000 views on Instagram. And all I know is that I'm just doing an interview with Andy Reid, and Annie Koblitz invents this, and all of a sudden I'm famous for being a little bit of a naive dope. Okay. So Miles, let's just go one by one. I'm going to give you the news of the day or my opinion of the day on something, and you're going to come back. Number one, Shane Steichen is named the new coach of the Indianapolis Colts, had his introductory press conference. And look, everybody wants to buy the offense that was in was with the Chargers, starting with Philip Rivers, with Shane Steichen, Frank Reich, Nick Sirianni. Migrates to Indianapolis, Shane Steichen, Frank Reich, Nick Sirianni. Goes to Philadelphia and is highly successful. And I guess my only point is, does Indianapolis have a Jalen Hurts in the bullpen? Your thoughts.
Well, they've got to get the quarterback right. And, you know, I think that we can all be kind of happy that this did not end up being Jeff Saturday, although that would have been entertaining to watch and probably interesting. This at least is a much better football move. We know that Nick Sirianni can work with, Shane Steichen, as well as Nick Sirianni, I suppose, can work with different quarterbacks and get them into different systems. So whoever they pick up, and Jim Irsay said that it's going to be a young guy, I think that Shane Steichen can be successful.
The last job open is in Arizona. And I think
they hired Gannon.
Oh, they hired Gannon. Yeah. How did I miss that?
Yeah.
Wow. I missed that. I'm sorry. I'm showing my.
No, that's okay. I wanted to say it before you got too far into what you're doing.
So let's look. Jonathan Gannon is a highly, highly respected coach. I'm a little surprised they didn't hire Lou Anarumo, quite honestly. But give Jonathan Gannon some credit, because the Philadelphia Eagles really helped both of their coordinators get head coaching jobs this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that Gannon can be a good head coach. My concern is going to be, okay, who is their offensive coordinator? Right, and what offensive system are they going to implement, and how are they going to be able to integrate Kyler Murray into that system once he's healthy? These are all questions that I don't know what the answers to them are. And frankly, I feel a little uninspired by the Jonathan Gannon hire, and maybe that's because of what I saw in the second half of the Super Bowl. But I don't know, man.
All right. This is something that you probably didn't expect to talk about today, but it's right in your wheelhouse.
Oh boy.
You know, Sean McVay has been a head coach in the NFL for 6 years, and yet he still is the youngest head coach in the NFL now that this hiring cycle is done. And Miles, my understanding is the Rams, I think, are going to be a different franchise in the next 2 or 3 years. I think they're going to try to accumulate some draft picks, maybe through trade of players and trading high picks, trading down to get a lot younger on the team. What do you see the immediate Rams future being?
I can definitely see that, because look, I mean, they have to get younger in certain spots, and they need to have more shots at the dartboard, proverbially, in order to get more draft picks and get guys in there that they can build up and that they can coach up and that can be really successful. I think one of the things that they did really well in the first few years of the Sean McVay, Les Snead era was coach up guys that then were going to go elsewhere, right, and still be successful. The John Johnsons of the world, you know, where you draft him. Yeah, Gerald Everett is kind of another example, even though he didn't necessarily have the biggest role there in the Rams. Now he's gone on and he's been a successful tight end in Seattle and also with the Chargers. I mean, there are guys that you can see where they were able to coach them up, but you haven't necessarily had that in the last few years. So I think that if they're able to get more shots at it and they are able to get guys in there that can really run the kind of offense and defense that Sean McVay wants to run, then they're still going to be in the mix. Frankly, I know we're, you know, mid-February, but I would expect them to either make the playoffs or at least be a part of the playoff mix next year. I just, that's the way I think that Sean McVay can get that team back on the right track.
Let's talk about the hiring cycle now, with all five jobs being filled, assuming
there are not any more changes, and I have no indication to suggest that there will be. Now, I think if Sean Payton were still around, it's possible there would have been at least one more change, I believe. But five changes, and my feeling is, Miles, that probably the DEI initiative people in the NFL office are probably going to be disappointed at the results of the five coaches named. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, DeMeco Ryans was an obvious choice for the Houston Texans, and that's the only minority coach that got hired. You did have Rand Carthon get hired as the Tennessee Titans GM, and I got to know Rand a little bit when we were both at the Rams at the same time, and I think that he's an excellent choice for them, and I think he should be great there. But, you know, when you look at some of these hires, you look at Frank Reich, and he just got fired and now has been hired again. And he's brought on somebody in Jim Caldwell, who was an excellent head coach in his own right in Detroit, or at least had more wins, right? And we've not seen Detroit be as good as they were when Jim Caldwell was that head coach in a very long time. Is, you know, as much as Detroit's on the upswing now, let's just look at the results. But then you also have somebody in Jonathan Gannon, who, I mean, like I said, I get it. You know, he was a very successful defensive coordinator, but when you have a team that needs a little bit more juice, to me, that one's a little uninspired, you know? And I don't know. I think Shane Steichen makes sense for a team that also needs to get younger and needs to have a quarterback and needs something else there. I get the energy aspect of it and the scheme aspect of it and the versatility of the offense of it. But yeah, I think that there should be some disappointment that there weren't more minority coaches hired, because there are certainly plenty of good candidates out there.
Can I ask you your opinion on something I wrote about? And I wrote this down as something I don't know that we've gone over at all, but it interests me. 19 of the 32 NFL coaches now come from their college experience, come from below Power Five conferences. And the reason that that really interests me is that, let's just say you are looking at, you know, the postseason this year with all of the teams that really did well, and especially, like, I think Philadelphia, Nick Sirianni, small high school in Jamestown, New York. Excuse me. And then a small college, Mount Union of Ohio. And my belief is that you really have to work harder to stand out when you are coaching at that level of football. Work harder and really develop strong tendencies to be, you know, to be better than the people who are at the, you know, the Notre Dames and the Alabamas and the Clemsons.
Yeah, I think part of that is the details matter so much when you're at that level, and you can't always just get by off of, okay, it's the recruiting. We're bigger, we're badder, we're better than everybody else, right? I mean, that's, at this point, that's what Alabama does. That's what Georgia does. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's how you win. But it's not, when you have that aspect of it and you're at the smaller school, you have to be able to teach the details, because talent isn't always going to overcome certain things. So I think that's part of why you see the coaches from that level then advance to where they are now, because they understand how much the details matter. And I think we were kind of talking about this before, because with Nick Sirianni, he knows it's all about the players, right? And we're talking about the play sheet with T.Y. Hilton and his former college coach, and how you come in and what are the plays for 13 and things like that. And you have that element of it, certainly. And the players definitely matter. I don't mean to, you know, put that down at all. But when you know how instructive or how much the details matter, because when you are at a certain level of football, that's how you have to be able to out-scheme people. That also will then help you, I think, at the NFL level, because it's not just about the players. It's what can you coach the players to do that actually gets to what their strengths are so that they can go out on the field and excel.
The one league thing that I think is interesting that not really a lot of people are talking about, I wrote about it on Monday, The NFL is going to play two games in Germany that next year, that next season. That was already established. But both of those games are going to be played in an eight-day span on back-to-back Sundays in November, most likely both in Frankfurt. And Miles, I've just got this prevailing opinion. I think the NFL ought to play more than five games a year overseas. I went to that Munich game this year. Yeah. There was more celebration and fun and pomp and circumstances than there was in Kansas City around the AFC championship game. The NFL should jump on that.
I mean, if we get to go, I love it, man. Let's do a Peter King podcast live from Frankfurt next year. Right. I mean, hey, that. We got two games in 8 days. Let's go.
Yeah. Okay, Miles, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
Three receivers all voted down for the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year. One, Andre Johnson. Two, Torrey Holt. Three, Reggie Wayne. Put those in order, one to three, and tell me, if you could only pick one for the Hall of Fame, which one would it be?
Oh, man, this is tough because Torrey Holt's my guy. Like, I haven't worked for the Rams. I know how good he was in his career. But, you know, when you're talking about Reggie Wayne and everything he accomplished with the Colts and that longevity that he had with that franchise, I would have to put him at number one. Torrey Holt, I guess, would be number two for me. And then Andre Johnson. And I hope that all three of them get in because I think all three of them are deserving. They were all really at the top of their game in their era, especially Torrey Holt. I don't think it's appreciated enough because of how bad those Rams teams were after kind of the beginning of his career. But you know, Reggie Wayne should be in, you know, what he did with the Indianapolis Colts and with Peyton Manning and the other quarterbacks that he had there. It really was special.
Here's my problem with the two guys who you have one and two on your list.
Oh boy.
Well, I think they were obviously great players. My big issue with both of them is that one was on the greatest show on turf for about 5 years, depending on how long you think that lasted, 4 or 5 years. And then Reggie Wayne is playing with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Both of them had a Hall of Fame receiver currently in the Hall of Fame on the other side of the field.
Yes.
What does Andre Johnson have? Now, Andre Johnson is bigger. He's as fast, stronger, and he's just as productive and more so, depending on which category you use. And he is playing with significantly lesser quarterbacks. Nothing wrong with Matt Schaub, but he's not Kurt Warner and he's not Peyton Manning.
Yes.
So to me, far and away, my number one's Andre Johnson. Two other quick topics. Number one, I think Derek Carr should go to the New Orleans Saints. Where do you think Derek Carr should go?
I would like to see him with the Carolina Panthers because I think that Frank Reich and having Josh McCown in that room, and then also you've got Jim Caldwell there. I think that that would be a good environment for Derek Carr.
Finally, Jalen Hurts. I don't want this podcast to get over without saying something about Jalen Hurts. I love this guy. I think he is absolutely terrific on and off the field. He makes no excuses. I was so impressed with him after the game. He played one of the best games a quarterback's ever played, okay, in the Super Bowl. I absolutely love him. I love everything about him. And I think the Eagles are going to be playing Kansas City in the Super Bowl one or more times in the next 5, 6, 8 years.
Jalen Hurts is one of those guys where, you know, you look at what he does and that will that he also has, and you can't help but be impressed by it. He is another one of those players, along with Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. They should not be playing a down of football in 2023 without a new contract. They need to get paid.
They all will. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I just really, really like this guy. Miles Simmons, much appreciate your time, everything. Next week, we are going to preview the NFL offseason. We're going to go through all the issues of the offseason. Appreciate your help today and appreciate your help all season. And that's it for this week's edition of the Peter King Podcast.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Three great words, free fries Friday, especially when they're used in that exact order. Get a free medium fries with $1 minimum purchase.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Valid one time on Fridays at participating McDonald's through 12/31/24. Excludes tax, must opt in rewards.